Station number 23181, Route 4.
This is Jessup, Rio 4. Now, what about your relationship with the officers? Starting at the top, I suppose. What did you actually feel about Captain Brock or Lieutenant Commander Brock? I mean, I can't decide whether you liked him or not.
He always struck to me as being somebody who knew what he was doing, and which I felt awfully grateful for. More than I can say for the following one. But we'll go to that.
Was he popular, Brock? You don't know his first name.
No, he wasn't popular because he never ever mixed with the men at all.
So he didn't seek popularity.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. He didn't try to mix with the men or anything like, you know, at any time.
Did others respect his competence, or were you sort of on your own in that?
No, I think most of them were confident under him.
But they were sort of respected him, but didn't like him.
Yeah, that's right. Perhaps I wouldn't say didn't dislike him. I think they just steered clear of him as far as possible.
What about the other officers? Any others you can remember the name of?
Yeah, I can. I say I can. He had a beard. He was Scott, and he was a smashing bloke. And one of them now, one of our officers, is now in the House of Lords or House of, or the MP. I think he's in the House of Lords. In fact, I'm almost certain of it.
And what were they like as a bunch of officers? I know you don't remember their names, but what made a good officer for you?
Oh, he would have a joke with you, he'd have a laugh with you, but at the self same time, you held him in respect. Yeah, I mean, although, you know, you could talk to him as a person, you still had a great deal of respect for him, and I think most of the crew did for him, because he would, you know, he would have a laugh and he would watch them, but when it came to nitty gritty, he was there and you did what he said. The Jimmy the One, he was very much like the skipper, very distant from the men. He knew how to judge the punishment out for anybody who offended. So, you know, then we had Ben Bolt. He was one of the officers. He was only a sub-lieutenant, Ben Bolt. What was he like? He was a very weak person. Very weak.
How did it show itself? I mean,
how would I say it showed? He never went at something and did it. He would, you know, sort of go out, you know, to explain really. But he was a great church person, actually, which could account for a certain amount of it. But we had the gunnery officer. He was quite a decent bloke. I didn't come into contact with the engineers at all.
Now, what about this trip back to England, you know, with the convoy? Anything happened?
Not really. We had quite a quiet time on our one.
And so what happened then? Was it?
Liverpool, yeah. We brought them back to Liverpool. And then, of course, we left and went over into Belfast, which was to be our base forevermore.
And which escort group were you part of? Or
the 4th Escort.
And so that was based at Pollock Dock?
Pollock Dock, yeah.
Belfast. Yeah. Now, can you give us an idea of what Pollock Dock was like? You know, I mean, the area.
Pollock Dock was very nondescript. It was just a quay where, and then further down the quay you had, what's the name, coming off to the ships, you know, pontoons sort of thing. There was nothing for the Navy on Pollock Dock at all. It was just a place where you pulled into, tied up, and what's the name? Because all ships used to have a what's name, a signature tune, and ours was da 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 da, or was it the hunting song? Yeah, I forget what it's called.
Post Hall Gallop.
That was ours. That was our signature tune. Yeah, funny how little things come back, isn't it?
How did you get that? You know, I mean, why was that?
I don't really know, but I know that we used to play it every time we came down the waters of the lock at Belfast, and I think nearly every other one had their own tune.
How did you get on with the other ship? Well, the crews from the other ships of the 4th Escort Group.
Oh, well, there was quite a lot of escort group in what's name, so you would never really know whether they come from your escort group or whether they came from somebody else. But all the ships, as far as I can remember, all the ships that are in there were members of different escort groups. We lost one of ours in our group.
Well, take me through. What's the first operations you remember then?
The first operations I remember was, I suppose we after that we came out and we were doing Atlantic convoys. We were on them for quite a while.
What were they like? What was the routine of an Atlantic convoy for you?
Very humdrum, really. We used to, I never forget the first time we sunk a submarine. I remember that well. Our call sign was Particle, and this particular trip, it wasn't awfully far into us doing Atlantic convoys, and we had we got a ping, and
you were on the bridge, were you?
Yeah, because we were called up then for. Once he picked up the ping, then what names goes, action stations go, and you go to your station.
And which one were you on? Were you on the crow's nest or the bridge? Or
no, I was on the actual bridge. I was down a bit. See, the skipper and all the others would be up there, and I'm down here, just by edge of the base of the mast. And then I can wash them out of everybody's way at this particular time. And we went in with a pattern. It's what the different patterns for different depths of depth charges. And we went in and we fired a pattern, and it went down and went up and swung round, come back again to see, pick up. Of course, they picked it up again almost directly, and they could tell then it was coming to the surface. And soon, the bow of the submarine came out through the water. Of course, a mighty cheer goes up, like, you know. And after that, they always used to call us One Pattern Particle. That was just a name we sort of got out, because we only dropped one pattern, because quite often you sort of go round and drop another lot and then another lot and all this sort of thing. And we were forever lasting after that known as One patent particle.
Do you know the date or the number of the U-boat?
Yeah, I think I can give you that.
Well, we'll look at that later. So you're not quite sure when it was, but it was quite early on. And
yeah.
And what other memories do you have of the Atlantic convoys?
Soaking wet and freezing cold. I think we all used to look forward to the really rough weather, to be honest.
Why was that?
Because the U-boats couldn't operate. Well, they couldn't operate till it was them, and if the chances are, if they fired a torpedo at you, you then went on the crest of a wave and the torpedo slid underneath you. It was a great chance, not to be caught out with it. But
were there many? What was the routine of the convoy then? Going out and back, and generally how it operated.
Well, we were forever last in changing course, to sort of off put any
zigzagging.
Lurking new boats. Because they used to, quite often if they found a convoy, one would join it, or just behind it, and because you realise that ASDIC operators very seldom swept round behind them. It was nearly always to the side or in the front, like that all the time. So they used to stick behind, but they could also then still report to other U-boats his position and everything, for them to join. I'm just trying to think if I don't think we got away scot-free on the first one. I think we lost at least one.
Would you be on the outer ring, would you?
Not always. Sometimes you'd sort of be going in between, because they used to have a nasty habit of coming and sitting underneath a merchantman, a fairly big merchantman. You see, and then the noise from the merchantman's screws would drown the noise of the U-boat, because they were quite small as compared with his. So you'd hear the merchantman. Of course, if you swung round doing an ASDIC search sweep, you would you say, "Oh, that must be that merchantman there." When all the time you got him sitting underneath, just a few feet below what the. So I don't think we got away scot-free on the first one, and we certainly didn't come in back, because we lost about four.
What happened when ships were hit? I mean, what was the routine? I mean, was there any way you could help? Or
no, when at one particular time, when we were on the Russian convoy, that is something that they do. Is they get an old ship, right, and put her at the end of the convoy. And she is there to pick up anybody in the water. But the trouble is, they're usually the first one to get picked off.
But in the Atlantic, they wouldn't do that, or had they already started doing that?
What, having
the old ship?
No. It just what quite often they did was had not rope ladders. I'll forget what they called them.
Carly floats.
What? They used to hang down from a boom, and what we used to have these nets, and we used to, if anybody got hit, they would then pull them out, and they would hang out and wash them to the ship, and you'd go through them slowly and hope that they weren't too cold to grab hold of the rope ladders or rope nets.
So you couldn't actually stop, but you could sort of slowly go through. Now, a lot of these Atlantic confines were actually in the Bay of Biscay, and this is mainly in the October-November period.
Yep.
You were covering convoys there. And one thing I wanted to ask you about is the German air activity, because they had some air raids by Focke-Wulfs, and they also had a glider bomb incident when they directed from a Heinkel, I think.
Yes.
What do you remember of the first thing, the sort of the normal bombing attacks? Do you recall anything about that?
Not very much. Naturally, I can remember them and remember the planes coming over, but they were mainly high level attacks. There was no sort of Stuka business with them. But the second one you're talking about, the one, the Heinkel, was quite scary, because they were radio-controlled bombs, and they literally screamed down. They used to make a noise, a sort of piercing noise as they came down. And we had one go into the water, very, very, very near to us. I wouldn't have thought it missed us by 20 or 30 yards. I would have thought, But they did make a noise, this noise.
What effect did it have on the ship, with landing so close? I mean, did it knock you about a bit, or?
Well, the actual...
The explosion, ship, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, not really. I can't even remember whether it did explode or whether it just, went into the water. I don't know whether they were compact bombs that they had to hit something really, solid before they exploded, or what? But it.
Now another incident that I picked up from it's from a history of the ship was about an incident when you approached the Warfield, which was and tried to sink a finisher off. It was a damaged merchantman. I think it was carrying ammunition or oil or something. It was ammunition, 6,000.
Yeah, that's right. Because
what do you remember of that?
I think when nobody knew actually what she was carrying, and as you were saying yesterday, the armament of the what's name is pretty feeble. We were having to keep going closer to this ship that was on fire, we were just doing no good at all. And it wasn't until a little bit later that somebody decided to ask what our cargo was. And it was a cargo of high explosive. And we were getting that close, we would have no doubt blown ourselves out of the water as well. I can't remember we did sink her in the end, or whether she was just left in the end to
I think it blew up shortly after you left her. You were about 5 miles
quite
away.
Lightly. But it wasn't until the skipper suddenly decided to ask for the manifest for the Warfield, and somebody turned around and said, she's only carrying high explosives. And we were having to go in, a lot closer than we would have done, because the shells were just bouncing off, like they wasn't making very much effect. They hadn't very much effect at all.
That was in one of the early ones. That was in August, and the Bay of Biscay stuff we talked about earlier was in October.
Yeah.
Anything else you remember about this period before you started on the Mediterranean convoys?
Yes. Yeah, well, at this time also we were doing quite a lot of sweeps down the Irish Sea and up around the north of Scotland.
Wasn't that in 1944, after you'd done the Naples convoys?
It could have been. Sorry. Yeah, it could have been.
It just looks from the history that, you went on to the KMF convoys after the, in November.
Uh-huh, after?
After the sort of Bay of Biscay stuff.
Yeah.
Well, December was the first KMF. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we should talk about them anyway. The KMF. What do you remember of those convoys?
We went down there several times. We had some really lovely ships with us. We had the Highland Chieftain, the Highland Princess, Oh, yeah, really big ships. They were all, you know, they were using them for troops. And
You were escorting the troops, were you?
Yeah.
The troop carriers.
Yeah. Yeah, we were taking them into we'd get one or two subs through the Med, but I can't ever remember us losing any ships. We may have done, but I can't remember, you know, offhand, I can't remember us losing any through there.
And what do you remember of the trips? They were pretty routine, weren't they?
They were very routine, because it used to be nice to feel the sun on your back, you know, when you went through the Med. In the neighbourhoods, we used to refuel at a place called Pagliano, which was just by, where's the place where the rude pictures are on the walls, you know, by Naples. We used to be great because we could go ashore.
What was it like when you went ashore?
Great, because they had, everything was really tip top. They had taken over Prince Umberto's palace, and it was turned into a sort of a cafe, wine bar, and you used to get a haircut there, and all this sort of thing. And the people were, I think the Italians, they didn't mind who it was, you know, whether it was the Germans or us or anybody else. And we used to be able to barter quite a bit in there. And at this time, I was coxswain of the motorboat.
Now, what were you doing? Well,
that was my duty.
I'll come back to that, but tell me a bit more about the Italians ashore. I'll ask you about being coxswain. Yep. What would you do when you went ashore then? What were your recreation?
We mainly go and have a drink, and also if you had any stuff to take ashore with you, like tins of herrings in tomato sauce that nobody would eat, and tins of corned beef and that sort of thing. You took them ashore and you could barter them for. And I brought home some quite nice pieces of marquisite, which they're very good, you know, very good at in Italy.
So it's sort of like mini minor
black
market.
Yeah,
you know,
it was actually. And we used to go ashore about 2 o'clock, but you had to be back quite reasonably early. I remember one particular time we went ashore. We used to have a chap who used to be on Aztecs, and his name was Duggan, and he was prone to lapses into doing the most stupid things. And we were ashore this evening. We were on our way back, actually, to the ship, and we were coming down the hill, and there was the horses and carts, you know, the landau sort of thing, and he wanted to ride back in the landau, and the driver said, no, you need too much, you know, this. Then, he was a big fella, he just got the horse round the neck and wrestled it to the ground, turning the landau over and everything else like. He was a real mad Abus, that fella.
Did you drink much, or were you...?
I drank a bit of wine, but not... I preferred beer, actually, to the wine at that particular time. I only sort of had one drug, and what's the name, and that was just before VE Day.
We'll come to that later. Yeah. Now, what about, you mentioned off tape, you mentioned these boys diving in the harbour. Can you tell us that story on tape? What was going on?
Well, actually, what was happening was that these lads, young kiddies, I mean, really, they were terrific swimmers, and they could swim out quite a long distance, and they were thought to be bringing these out, these sticky bombs. and sticking and trying to stick them on the ships. I can honestly say I don't remember of any of them going off or anything like that. But used to have to do patrol on a big torch and for listening out. Of course, as soon as you heard the water lapping against the hull of the ship, you what's name? I think it did go on, you know, and I think someone were caught, and I've heard that some were actually killed, you know, with the bombs.
Now let's go back to what jobs you had on the ship. You'd started off on the bridge duties.
Yeah.
Now what was the next? Did you go to the guns before being coxswain, of the motorboat, or did you go straight to being coxswain?
I was made coxswain of the motorboat, and it was just a matter of sort of handing jobs out. Pardon me, until we went into Naples, most times we tied up against the jetty or the quay. And, of course, there was never a real need for a coxswain of the motorboat. And I was... when we went to Naples, we used to lay in the bay, and of course we needed the motorboat to take shore parties in and that sort of thing. And of course the old man used to go in, the skipper used to go in, or over to one of the other boats. He thought up the great idea at that particular time of... he thought the lads were getting a bit stale, so he decided we'd have a regatta. And this particular time we were there, we had this regatta. There was a sailing and rowing and all this sort of thing, you know. And it really was good. Like, you know, everybody enjoyed it.
Did you take part? What sort of event?
I think I was in the sailing crew, you know, in the sailing crew. Which we did over a measured and sort of swung round and came back again. But you know, it was something different, you know, which sort of was interesting. And then, of course, we had our famous collision.
Tell me about that then.
Yes, on our way back, we were coming home from one of the I think it would be the last one we did. And as we were coming up to Gibraltar, and just coming through the straits, when it was middle of the night, and coming the opposite way was this ship that was all painted white, all lit up, and everything else, and it was a hospital ship, the American hospital ship Wisteria, and we had to hit it. How we hit a lit-up hospital ship, I should never understand. But we did, and of course we had to go into Gibraltar for have some of the plates replaced, like, and rewelded. While we, you know, to get us home again.
Was there much damage done to the? Was it Wisteria?
Yeah, the Wisteria. There was the name of the hospital ship.
Was there much damage?
Yeah,
done
we had when we went out onto deck. Our deck was rather covered in rivet heads, where we'd taken them off of off the side of the Wisteria. But the best part was that the following day, of course, she had to come in as well for having an inspection. The Wisteria, she came into Gibraltar as well. And of course, the following day, the skipper was walking on deck, like, you know, and all of a sudden, all these people arrived. And they were nurses and doctors and crew of the Wisteria coming to have a look what damage had been done. And the skipper was getting a bit annoyed, you know, and he told them where to go, like, you know, in a certain manner. I think he felt it quite a lot, you know, that we'd hit a hospital ship, you know. Because it was so lit up and everything, you know, nobody could sort of did not recognise it.